Welcome to The Awakening for Aquarius. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer. Here with your audio reading. Still in somewhat soft-spoken mode, as I've had a week with a bit of respiratory distress. I seem to be finding my stride as I do these readings. I get warmed up, but here we are at the beginning. So I'm running a little bit cool. Well, now that I'm done congratulating Capricorn for having survived Pluto in Capricorn, I want to congratulate you for having survived Pluto in Capricorn, because, quite frankly, Pluto through the 12th house is every bit as challenging as Pluto going through your own sign, which it's now doing. But I suspect, with special difficulty, because Capricorn would seem to put up so much more resistance to, you know, basic change, which is kind of what Pluto is. I mean, Pluto is the large forces at work moving society along, and those large forces often get hijacked by dark forces who then kind of capitalize, and I'm here to help you not be subject to that, and not happening on your watch or participating in any way. And you know, the advantage we all have, or the advantage that we have who have some understanding of these things, is we can think about the larger picture of what society is going through, and consider our personal response, which almost never happens, unless in the exception of those who are specifically wanting to capitalize on things. And this is not, we're not here for that. We're here for personally thriving and for creating a better world, and for bringing some of the Aquarius back to Aquarius. You know, you've probably heard me say at least between 2 and 10 times that the first impression we all got of Aquarius was that Fifth Dimension song that wound up in the movie Hair, or that started in Hair and the Fifth Dimension did it. I forget which way that went. But it gave a bunch of characteristics of Aquarius that actually belong to Pisces. Harmony and understanding, you know, peace and love abound, and all this, the horses dancing in Central Park and the hippies running around. Aquarius is very different than that. Pisces is oceanic and encompassing and talks about very large, sweeping things, you know, things that might be overwhelming. Whereas Aquarius narrows that field quite a bit and addresses the smaller groups and the more select concept of humanity. That is to say that with Aquarius, it's a group, it's the sign of groups, but there tends to be an in-group and an out-group, which, of course, doesn't sound very Aquarian, but it's exactly what it is. But more important than that is that Aquarius crystallizes patterns. And essentially, whatever it touches or whatever touches it tends to crystallize. So we saw this happen with the internet. Whereas it sprouts as this thing. A couple of people have email addresses. You visit a website here and a website there. Maybe you got on the day when you were chatting on America Online, and it was pretty cool, and it seemed like a lot of people were there. And then suddenly, not only does this thing spread, but it spreads like somebody dropped some Ice 9 into the ocean, and then suddenly the entire planet was frozen. This is the kind of action that Aquarius can be behind. And it encompassed everything that Aquarius encompasses, particularly our social existence. The challenge of Pluto and Aquarius is going to be spotting the ways in which you've internalized these patterns and consciously letting them be recreated for you, or recreating them yourself as a matter of choice, or having Pluto break them down. By the way, I am my mind is not at full speed. I'm kind of running at about 2/3, so I will be pausing frequently to think. I'm not working with any kind of a script, so I'm just working off the chart, not even working off the reading that I wrote for you a couple of weeks ago. So we need this quite badly. The internet has become, and the entire digital age, the digital environment, has become so all-encompassing and so all-consuming that it really feels like we've been swallowed by the Borg. And that's a very apt metaphor from the Star Trek Next Generation episode, you know, the one with resistance being futile and all that. And the Borg is the pattern. The Borg is the algorithm. The Borg is letting themselves think in the way that mechanized thought works. There are concerns that AI is becoming too much like us, that AI is becoming, unrecognizably seeming like human, and we can't tell the difference. I'm sure there are a few people who can't tell the difference. Most of us can tell the difference. You can tell the difference because it's so damn stupid. And you're not. And if you are awake, you can see that. And if you're not awake and you're not one of the particularly bright ones, then you've got a problem, and you think that the mechanical voice at the end of the bank's telephone number is actually a person. I'm sure there's a couple of people who do. The real problem is us becoming like them. And the temptation, I think, particularly for young people, to be robotic is, first of all, that there is very little in the way that many people have to defend themselves against this. And the second thing is that there's a safety in it. There's a safety in not going off script. There's a safety in not being vulnerable. There is a safety in conditioning your mind to bypass or delete what you feel threatens you, and what threatens you is likely to be what makes you feel human in some way, what makes you want to respond in a sincere way. Especially if, even in the case of loving feelings, particularly in the case of loving feelings, that seems to threaten you, whereas what is conducted perfectly well by digital are feelings of hostility and outcast and alienation. And a kind of confusion, and the confusion leads to kind of a vertigo of self. And the vertigo of self is angering because the elements of your consciousness that are fairly well adapted to be here, to your senses, and that includes a diversity of senses that Aristotle didn't know about. You know, himself was not quite tuned in enough to understand that empathy is a sense, and that the ability to not only see a person's face, but read a person's face, to not only hear a person's voice, but to read beyond the words of a person's voice. All of these are very important human adaptations. And that's what's lost in this digital maze. And there are a great many people for whom this feels good. This is the challenge. This is really the threat, I think. And the Turing test, you know, is not really about whether this computer can fool you into thinking that it's human, but rather, can this human fool you into thinking that it's some kind of an AI mechanism? And one of the things that Pluto is likely to do for you, because it's so close to you, it's so imminent and immediate in your first place, first house, getting near your sun or right on top of your sun, getting near your moon, getting near your ascendant, is to want to distinguish yourself in some way, to stand apart. Pluto is a bit more centaur-like than people want to admit. I mean, Pluto is an orbit crosser, and things that are orbit crossers are, by definition, centaurs. I don't think anyone's going to redefine Pluto as a centaur, but the point is that it acts like one in that, it breaks the boundary of a known planet. And that boundary is one of denial and deception and fantasy. And in the most positive sense, it's a boundary of the imagination. That's the boundary of Neptune. And the amount of Neptune involved in the takeover of our minds by digital is completely underestimated, that it required this kind of dream-inducing substance to be able to tolerate all of this. And I suspect that one of the things that Pluto may do is to make you a little bit less tolerant of this kind of very strange pseudo-human conformity, and want to step out of it. Now, this is still going to require courage, but Pluto can signify that, and it will certainly, when the time comes that the screws are down on us again as they were in 2020, I think there's going to be even more courage available with Pluto, because there are, first of all, a high number of now educated people, but also because the quality of Pluto is going to be to distinguish the individual from the group. And this is one of the very hallmarks of the whole Aquarius concept, is where the individual meets the group. And that would be you. And therefore, I would plan on having many instances in your life where you will be the individual who is going to have the courage to stand up to the group. There's always a couple, but there need to be more, and there need to be more who are prepared to really hold their ground. And that ground may be the ground of not knowing. It may be the ground of remembering what has happened in the past. It may be the ground of keener perception learned from life experience. And it might be the ground of an ability to really stay in the moment and to not think that everything is some kind of a fabulous gift from the future. It's also going to be necessary for us to reckon with how much we have given up. And there are really two constituencies of people who are thrilled to have nearly everyone giving up so much that was once so central to our lives. And one is the purveyors of this technology who are basically now succeeding in metering and selling back to us every last social interaction is becoming a social transaction. The conversion of sex into OnlyFans is quite impressive. OnlyFans is a site where you can subscribe to pretend to have some form of a girlfriend. Yes, it's a subscription girlfriend service. And these are real women, though they can rig their system up to not so sophisticated robots. When you watch the robots working, you wonder who could possibly believe this. But there are people who do. And this is one of many examples of metering, capitalizing on. But the real world is monetizing transactionalizing the most basic human interaction, by which I mean chit-chat and flirting by subscription. And this feeds desperation, and then the desperation feeds the wide diversity of these things that exist, which included, I don't know if it still exists, Match.com and all the dating sites that were really the first sign that this was going to happen. And I mean, there, you know, my mother met her husband in the Village Voice personals, and I know people have met decent people on Match.com and all this stuff, but still, that's not hanging out on Friday night. And so you are likely to be one of the probes. I keep using that word, and I don't. It's a term from therapy, and it's a term from McLuhan, who was into Gestalt therapy. Well, Gestalt psychology, and I've got to trace the origins of this word probe. And there's a few contexts in which I mean it. One of which is to try something and see what the response is. So, you know, sometimes I'm working on an article and I'll print out a draft, 10 or 15 copies, and I'll run around the neighborhood and give people copies and say, if you have time to read this, I'm going to come back in an hour and tell me what you think. That's a form of a probe. Sometimes my pranks are probes just to see how people respond. Like claiming that the flat earthers all have admitted that their whole thing was a joke. That was a really good probe. The other thing I mean by probe is that a person is themselves a kind of a sensitivity instrument, like a weather station, who is going to be able to stand there and sniff the air and have a sense of the barometer and the humidity and the wind. And both of these describe you, though I think that with Pluto in Aquarius, you're a very likely candidate for the personal probe. Your whole existence will be an experiment through this era. And all you really need to get over is any tendency that it's somehow better, easier, safer, or more profitable in some way to just simply do what other people do, and also to adapt to any new technology, which is a somewhat Aquarian thing. Aquarians like to be early adapters to technology, and you know, often think that people who aren't early adapters are really missing something big. You know, whereas you know, the other people, you know, Tauruses may just be just as happy sending postcards. They don't need telegram. They can call up Western Union and send a telegram. But in any event, the ability to go with the flow is a big piece of this. You know, Aquarius has a number of different types of symbolic representations. One of them is the water bearer, who has to fill up her cup somewhere, so she's able to distribute the water. And another is a goddess standing in the Nile, measuring the Nile, using this tool called the Normalica, which is a ruler to measure the depth of the Nile. And this is this is an indication of how well the people will eat the next year before nature could be controlled. The great hope was that we could at least measure nature in some way. Aleister Crowley has my favorite depiction of Aquarius. It's actually the Lady Freda Harris, and I'm not privy to the correspondence between them, but I would say that apart from the fact of doing the painting, the symbol is an exact collaboration between the Lady Freda and the Master Therion, which is that the figure in Aquarius is a conducting entity between cosmic energy and the way that it is distributed on Earth. And though the you know, moon in the seventh house and peace, love, and dancing police horses is something of a joke, you have the ability to be receptive to that kind of cosmic love and be one of the people who is a reminder of the tenuous nature of life on our planet. Hold that idea open, hold that portal open, hold open the possibility that we can care about one another. I mean, you know, it's just so depressing sometimes to see what is going on. I'm on the front page of the New York Times a lot. That's my kind of middle of the road bellwether for the acceptable lie of the day. And Elon Musk is on the cover every day in some context. And I look at that face and that kind of cutesy look of someone who's kind of a half trillionaire, mostly in government money. And I think about his plans to, you know, robotize the human race. And I think, how are we going to get past this? How are we going to get beyond this? It just seems that people go so willingly and so easily give up this thing that frightens us so much, which is our vulnerability. And so the greatest gift that you can offer to people during this miniature era, the Aquarian era that we are in, of Pluto and Aquarius, is to express your humanity through your vulnerability, through being emotionally accessible and available to people, and you know, trying to love your brothers and sisters as much as you love your cat. It's not easy, I know. Thank you. So there's a lot of astrology to cover, and I'm real glad I wrote a 20-page report for you, so I don't feel like I have to cover it all here. But let's check in with something I may not have gotten to, which is related to Neptune and Saturn leaving your second house of self-esteem. And that term is starting to bug me. You may have heard in one of the other readings I explained that the term self-esteem comes from phrenology, head bump reading, where there was a head bump that measured self-esteem. And so what I mean when I say that is that it's a little beyond the cold mechanical psychological definition, which somehow, you know, modern psychology picked it up from phrenology, is that it is the resource of respecting yourself. It is not necessarily feel good, but it's more about the decisions that you make and how you make them. I mean, I'll give you an example. There are certainly times when I think how much more I could have done if I had more self-esteem. You may think, oh, that's a ridiculous statement, but hear me out. And then I will go over to the shelf it's over in the next room in the suite, and pull a binder off the shelf. And the binder includes almost every parody and satire that I created going back to age 14. It's a thick binder of all these little punks and pranks and fake publications and fake newspapers. And I still do them every year and send them to people for example, with your astrology chart set, you know, the phony UAC program, the astrology program satire went out, and the coupons from Vashon Island. Well, I have all this stuff impeccably preserved. And I look at that and I think, this is a plain, simple demonstration of the self-respect that I have. The mere fact that I saved all these things to have them, to look at, to laugh at, again, like sometimes 40 years later. The first one I ever did was a spoof on the feminist publication in my high school, because I worked for a publication called The Gadfly, the social sciences journal, where mostly the young men worked. And right at the next office was Fireworks, Feminists Involved in Reaching Equality. And that's where these kind of lesbian girls, young women, had their office, and they had their publication. There was a lot of publishing going on in my high school. And so, the first thing I ever published was a spoof on Fireworks called Waterworks, about the first female garbage man, and so forth. So look for signs of your self-respect. Now, why do I say this? Pisces can make it difficult to have self-respect. It is self-diminishing to have Pisces on the second house of self-respect. And you may think, well, I would have to really interview you and plot your astrology against your CV and maybe go out for lunch or maybe get to know you to the point where you tell me what you regret you haven't done in life. But the feeling of lacking self-esteem, self-respect can exist with Pisces. And Neptune has been there now since 2011. This has been like trying to walk on water. It has been like trying to survive a flood. This is not an easy set of circumstances. Chiron passed through the territory just a little bit before, I think, 2010, I pointed out a date. I think it was a date in 2009, a triple conjunction of Jupiter, Chiron, and Neptune in late Aquarius that may have been a kind of a high mark for what you thought you were capable of. And one of the things I'm here to tell you is that you remain capable of that. But what might have changed is your outlook. We are all much older. These 15 years have been, we have lived through wars. We have lived through wars that have become domestic wars. We're supposed to be working in shops in town or farming in the fields and not being subjected 24/7 to articles about viruses and ads demanding we take a different drug every 20 minutes and mass shootings and another war-torn country that all Westerners know, particularly Americans know, that whenever we see people blown up, we are paying for it. And I suspect that there is always more silent concern and contemplation of some personal karma that we all bear for that, and whether we will not in some way be compelled to pay for our complicity and our silence. I don't know that that's going to come to pass, but I know that that some people are worried about that. And this is not merely guilt. This is a potentially healthy response to the terrible things that are being done no longer in our name. It's almost all covert in some way, but we know. So Chiron is gone from Pisces, and Saturn and Neptune are going to spend through mid to early. Well, when I don't know. My laptop is buried under things. Early-ish 2026, making their exit from Pisces. And the important thing to remember is that a planet is being left behind in Pisces. And I wrote a section in the Pisces reading. And if you have access to that, please take a look. And if you don't have access to it, just write us a note at the CS address and say, Aquarius seeking access to Pisces reading, and we'll send it. That talks about the nature of centaur planets. And the baddest of them is being left behind in Pisces. The one that's associated with the fear of consequences. The one that's associated with actual consequences. The one whose keyword includes the phrase, for key concepts includes the phrase, the buck stops here. Meaning, the buckhorn stops, and that person deals the cards. And this is transiting through your house associated with your well of self-respect. Boris Cece's leaving too. That's been there a long time. Between Neptune and Boris Cece, it was pretty easy to fudge or, float. Or imagine Saturn arrived later 2 years ago and is likely to have forced you to do some real work and to make some different decisions, which is what self-esteem is ultimately all about. The decision to save that thing or throw it out, right? But Nessus, I'm taking the presence of Nessus in Pisces as a sign of strength. And the sign of strength, the sign of character, the sign of integrity, the idea on which you can, in fact, build on tangible respect for yourself that allows you to make decisions based on that respect. There's no point otherwise, right? The lack of self-respect is somebody calls you up and says, I'd like to hire you to do this, and you don't feel like you deserve it, and you turn them down. Or my father, an Aquarian, in 1963, graduating from Brooklyn College, depressed because he thought there were no more jobs in television, and therefore he was going to have to become a professor, that all the jobs were taken up. So for all of his involvement and interest in television, he failed to miss, thing one, that it was going to be rather of a growth industry. And number two, he counted himself out. This is the issue. What the centaurs all do is they allow you to see in the dark. They allow you to locate what may seem like a missing piece of your soul and work from there. I mean, the concept of soul and what we call self-esteem are very similar. They're both learning processes, and they're both gifts, often given to ourselves. And the manifestation of Nessus is likely to be something similar to a sensing that if you take action on this, it may have consequences, and it will have consequences. And I think this is one of the main paralyzing factors for people who would seem to lack self-esteem, is that there's to act as if one had self-esteem is activates so many levels of potential and of potential responsibility that your sign that you're thinking clearly, that you're looking right at it, is you realize the problem of consequences and the benefit of consequences, that your actions, your choices, your relationships, how you treat yourself, how you treat others, all have consequences. That's Nessus. But it's not, it doesn't have that. Chiron's not always chipper, but Chiron, in most of Chiron's manifestations, it is a constructive, teaching, loving force. You can't say that about Nessus. The story of Nessus involves all kinds of betrayal. This is essentially one long story of betrayal. And by the way, a measure of self-esteem is what you do with the people who betray you. In my view, the sooner you get them out of your life and don't let them back, the better you're doing. So, you are not being left empty-handed here. You are being left with this somewhat dangerous, astrological utility. There's going to be a transition into the Aries phase of your life with your ruling planet, Saturn, and then the modern ruling planet of Pisces, Neptune, going into Aries. And here is the unfolding of your true potential as a thinker, as a participant in society, as an initiator, fucking ovation, as an initiator. And so there has to be someone who initiates if anything's going to happen. And that someone has to be able to withstand being told to piss off quite a few times, because that's often what happens. Everything's a bad idea till suddenly one day it's a fantastic idea. And the difference between the two of them is the person who personally, with their effort and their confidence or confidence building process, spanned the difference. So I think I talk quite a bit about the this kind of flourishing in Aries and how strong that is, because it is your house related to your extraordinary power of ideation. But I want to bring up one thing that that I may have left out there. I do not think I mentioned Boris Cici. So this is a planet that's a creature of the late 1990s. It orbits in about 280 years. I'm in love with this planet. I'm in love with the book that it is mentioned in. It only exists in a fictional book by Kurt Vonnegut, which I am almost universally, unless I forgot, recommending that everyone read. And your only regret will be that it's too short, and that you could read it in one afternoon, because that's how it's written. Vonnegut, a highly erudite man, you know, the author who could fix a refrigerator, as he once put it, swiped the idea for Cat's Cradle out of the files of the General Electric Public Relations Department, where somebody, one of his predecessors working there, came up with it as a way to an idea to impress the British writer H.G. Wells, who didn't like it. And the concept was for Ice Nine. And the whole book is about the extremely precarious state of the world that we're in. I mean, this is why this book is just so beautiful. Apart from the fact that it is wicked, wicked funny. In ways you did not think it was possible for someone to be funny. And Boris Cici is the sun god in this book. But I don't limit the interpretation of Boris Cici there. I take Boris Cici as a kind of a stand-in for the entire concept of Cat's Cradle. And the message of Cat's Cradle has got a lot to do with the mediation between truth and lies, and what would seem to be the necessary lies that get people by, and why we need those. You know, when you're eating a Frankfurter at a baseball game, you cannot be thinking about a pig getting slaughtered. You might fall in love with that pig. So there has to be some kind of a very strange Chinese wall of consciousness that separates us from all of these unpleasant things that we can't do anything about and don't really want to know about. And Boris Cici has a lot of Saturn-Neptune to it, in that Saturn and Neptune contrast the reality principle with the fantasy and denial principle, the imaginal with the realistic, the imaginal being Neptune, the realistic being Saturn, the boundless, expansive, all-encompassing being Neptune, the restricted, contained, and cordoned off, built up, structured being Saturn. Well, when they get together, really strange things can happen. And that's a lot. There's a lot of truth and lies type of mediation going on with Saturn-Neptune. And this is, it's almost as if the whole function of your mind is going to be attempting to sort out the difference between truth and lies, and realizing that you have the power to essentially sell anything to anyone as the truth, even though it might not be true. And then having the integrity to admit to what is true and what is not true, even though you're in a position to deceive them. And boy, do we see a lot of that bullshit on the internet right now. The people who go onto there, they create platforms looking for what people want to believe and then selling it to them. Woohoo. And this is all landing right in your house of ideas, of writing, your involvement with your community, and also of self-formation, Aries. Now, the provocateur here is going to be the quicker forming. There's going to be three iterations of the conjunction of Chiron and Eris, and one of them is going to be in the spring. And so this is the element that's going to keep you on your toes. And the way that it will keep you on your toes is that it may come with a kind of anxious self-awareness that might feel really uncomfortable, a little bit like Nessus in Pisces. And I suggest sitting with that lack of comfort and never, ever trying to rationalize it away, that there are certain truths that are uncomfortable to certain people with certain points of view and to certain points of view that you may have had that need to be confronted. And who knows, they might not even be truths. They may just be a potential that you become aware of that then has to be evaluated. And so here again is an expression of your existence as a probe of some kind. All right, that, of course, is a developing story. And I will do a follow-up on Borsisi, though that really needs to get added to every product livery page. My 2011 article earlier in Borsisi and Pisces that fairly close to predicts the Fukushima disaster, which was based on nuclear power plants built by none other than GE. All right, a couple of more things. Creativity stoked and ignited by the mid-year transit of Uranus making its first probe into testing the waters of Gemini. The transition begins in the summer of 25 and ends in the spring of 26, and then we're fully underway with Uranus in your fifth place, Gemini. And this, I think, is just going to stoke the power of your mind. And here you're going to want to rely on, so many possibilities that you're going to want some focus and some discipline. But, Uranus wants a lot of experimentation. So, it's important to experiment without being totally in love with how right you are. One of the results of an experiment can be, oh, that was interesting. Let's try something else. Or, oh, that didn't seem to work. I blew up the garage. Okay, let's try something else. So that will continue to feed this whole scenario. Building on the same theme, also in the middle of the year, Jupiter enters Cancer, which is your house of daily work activity and also wellness. And this is a very high vitality house to have, sign to have on your sixth place. It's one of the places where you seek contact with the water signs. Pisces is another. And one of the things going on in 25, 26 is, in 24 also, is planets leaving feminine signs and entering masculine signs. That includes Pluto going into Aquarius, which is a masculine sign, Saturn and Neptune going into Aries, which is a masculine sign, Uranus going into Gemini, which is a masculine sign. That's it, except for really minor planets. But the watering hole is going to be Cancer. And so the sixth place. And so this is suggesting that, you know, what you do every day must nourish you. And there must be room left every day for variance in how you feel physically. A normal person, a healthy person, feels different every day. Maybe not tremendously different, maybe a little different, maybe a lot different. But there is a ebb and flood of how we feel. And cancer really emphasizes this. And it's saying to ride with those tidal changes rather than trying to be too regimented about them. Will also be a good time to, if there are corrections you need to make in lifestyle, this is going to be a great time to do it. Let's see how much time there is. Let's briefly address the retrogrades. I didn't draw in the Venus retrograde in your chart. I wasn't really working from a template. I was really working from memory. But let's start with Mars retrograde. So first of all, we're in one of those times when we have Venus and Mars retrograde in very close proximity. They're not retrograde that often. I think like 8, Venus is retrograde 8% of the time. Mars maybe 10% of the time. So Mars is retrograde now, and it's retrograde right on your seventh house. And it is testing your environment for any new degree of conflict created by the sudden concentration of power in your field, which is Pluto in Aquarius. Have I said that anywhere? That one of the most basic fundamental facts of Pluto in Aquarius is that your energy field is being concentrated. Okay, that's the best word that I have, because Pluto is concentrated. And there are a diversity of different responses that the environment around you may have to you as this probe into the environment with your newfound concentrated force of personality and soul. And so any dramas that you're in now, relational dramas and so forth, are a test of your persistence, your flexibility, and your consistency as Mars makes a series of oppositions to Pluto, the first in November, the second in January, the third, I think, in April or May. And the way that I read that is to let people do their thing, to let them react or respond as they're going to react or respond. And while you may have a diversity of feelings, to pretty much present yourself in a steady, steady and straightforward way, and to be there when people circle back, when they have to, fly out in their orbit and come back like a comet, they'll always come back. And then the question is your love for them enough to offer them your consistency and see them through the changes that they need to go through now? All right. Venus retrograde. So we know that a lot of planets are going into Aries from Pisces. And running vanguard of that is Venus, which rules your ninth and rules your fourth. So spiritual and domestic. Venus will run the path of Saturn and Neptune, making conjunctions to them. I think, on both sides of the imaginary line, the Aries point. And so Venus will go into Aries, retrograde into Pisces, go back into Aries, all the while making conjunctions to Saturn, Neptune, and whatever other points are there at that time. And so this is like a warm-up, and again, a probe, the concept of a probe. Venus is going first to give you the ability to perceive and feel and notice using your senses. This is very Venus. What this is all about, and to have some practice when the big boys, Saturn, Neptune, and Borsisi, get there, you will have your kind of field guide largely gathered in, I would say, approximately February and March, and into April. And the message of Venus is lose your mind and come to your senses. So when in doubt, pay attention to what you are perceiving, what your senses are telling you, and pay attention to who is getting that information. I don't know who it was, it might have been Aristotle, no, Thomas Aquinas, called it the sensus communis, the place where the senses are received in consciousness. The Bhagavad Gita identifies Lord Krishna as this being when he says, I am the mind of the senses and the consciousness of creatures. That is what I have for you for the 2025 annual edition of Planet Waves. Signing off with love, your Aquarius Moon Astrologer, at 2:06 p.m. on the 27th of December. Lots of love, and bye for now.